Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on the first Monday of every month on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital broadcasting, community, regional and national broadcasters, niche broadcasting, pirate and alternative radio, podcasting, radio ownership and diversity, and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on this edition of Wireless.
Limerick City Community Radio.
Your city, your station,
your voice.
We go to Limerick to look at the development of community radio in the city. Limerick-based radio academic Rosemary Day tells us about the background to community radio in Ireland and the challenges facing the sector. We also meet those involved with Limerick City Community Radio and student station Wired FM, which is based at Mary Immaculate College.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
But first to Radio Retro, which each month delves into the archives to unearth a gem from radio history. Last month we heard from broadcast historian Eddie Bowen, who specialises in the history of Irish pirate radio. Arguably the most famous of Ireland's pirates was Radio Nova, which broadcast from Dublin between 1981 and 1986 and caused an earthquake in Irish radio. Nova's slick sound, powerful signal and brash owner Chris Carey were too much for the authorities, and the station's history was often dramatic. Nova was raided by the Department of Posts and Telegraphs on several occasions. On the 19th of March 1983, the station closed down, prompting angry protests by thousands of listeners outside the studios, only to return to the air triumphantly a few days later. Scared at losing advertising revenue and listeners to the new kid on the block, RTE jammed Radio Nova's signal on a number of occasions in an attempt to make it inaudible. This recording from the 29th of June 1982 is of the evening news on Radio Nova, which of course led the bulletin with the jamming story.
Broadcasting from Dublin on 846 AM and 88 FM in stereo.
Radio Nova!
With Brian Dobson, Michael O'Brien, and Bob Gallico. Good evening. Radio Nova's transmissions were seriously disrupted today when RTE effectively took over its transmitter by jamming the microlink from the studios in Herbert Street to their transmitter in Rathfarnham. The station came back on the air using its auxiliary transmitting link, although its other link is still being interfered with. The interference emanates from RTE's broadcast museum in Rathmines Road at Portobello Bridge. Radio Nova's technicians established that it was definitely RTE who caused the jamming. An investigation is being pursued. This evening, a spokesman for Radio Nova said that other than Nova, only RTE would have the technical expertise and equipment available to carry out the operation. This afternoon, RTE switchboard was inundated with calls from Radio Nova listeners complaining about the disruption of service. Earlier today, we sent our reporter down to the RTE Museum in Rathmines, and he asked the caretaker if he worked for RTE.
No, I don't.
Can you tell me, were you aware of the fact that this building is being used to jam Radio Nova?
The sound you heard during our reporter's second question was of the door slamming. Harassment of advertisers on Nova has also been reported. One company supplying RTE with its products have been told that RTE will discontinue doing business with them unless they cease advertising on Radio Nova. In May of this year, Lansdowne Market Research Limited carried out a survey of radio listenership during 1 week amongst a sample of 925 adults representative of the 15 to 34-year-old age group living in the Dublin area. Results showed that Radio Nova had a 41% share, as against 22% for RTE Radio 1 and 24% for Radio 2, giving Nova almost twice as many listeners as either RTE 1 or 2.
Other news in Dublin today.
A dramatic Nova news bulletin from the 29th of June 1982 featuring the late Bob Gallico, one of the station's most popular broadcasters. The voice at the end is that of Brian Dobson, who, of course, went on to work for RTE itself. That recording is courtesy of dxarchive.com. If you'd like to send us an archive recording for Radio Retro, feel free to get in touch through social media or on our blog wirelessflirt.wordpress.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Not all of Ireland's pirate radio stations were large commercial operators like Radio Nova. Stations driven by non-profit motives and aiming to serve the communities to which they broadcast first came on the air during the 1970s and 1980s in the pirate era. The first two independent radio and television commissions ignored the community sector and prioritised licensing commercial broadcasters, and it wasn't until the mid-1990s that licensed community radio was up and running around the country. Limerick has five licensed stations today, four of them community broadcasters. We'll be hearing from some of those later in the programme, but first I met radio academic Dr. Rosemary Day, head of the Department of Media at Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. Rosemary is an expert on Irish community radio, and she described the reluctance of the authorities to license the sector in the early 1990s.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tragedy, and looking back you'd wonder what all the fuss was about and why it was so difficult. But to paint a clear picture, I hope, and a truthful one for people, in 1988 when the Act came into being, there were great celebrations around the country because many of the pirate stations were hoping to become legal entities, and as you said, they went off the air because the condition that was made was that any station that was still on air after midnight, whatever date it was in 1987, would not get a licence. And so people came off the air voluntarily, and it solved that particular problem for the government. But the difficulty then was that the first commission under Justice Henshey took it upon themselves to issue the invitation for licences. And they issued invitations for licences for 28 areas, or 28 licences. So one for each county and two for Dublin. And these were all on commercial basis. And the difficulty lay with the Act, really, when groups who had been pirates, or groups like the one I was involved with, who had never broadcast before, but who wanted to found a community radio station, which would be not for profit, but would be for the benefit of the community. And in my case, it was for Irish speakers. It became Radio Na Liffey. When we were disappointed and wrote in about this, we were told that the Act didn't specify what type of independent broadcasting it would be, and that it was just that RTE's monopoly was now broken, and the Commission would decide in its wisdom where they would grant licences and on what basis. So the first round of licensing went through in 1988, and the stations came on air in late 88 and early 89. And so some of those would be very familiar to listeners, like Clare FM, Radio Kerry, Highland Radio. In Dublin, I can't remember if
98 FM,
98 and Classic Kits.
Capital. Think, yeah.
Capital, which have changed then to FM 104. So they were, as people know them, local radio stations, but with a commercial basis. They have an imperative to make profit. And they serve their locality, and they play music, and they have a duty to broadcast news and current affairs, 20% of their output. And that all works fine. But for those of us who were actively seeking what we would see as our constitutional right to have, to be able to live our full life through the medium of Irish, we were still left with no station. And so we lobbied quite hard, and we've held a series of public meetings. And at the same time then, we became aware of another group who were lobbying quite hard, and who were looking for meetings with the Minister and with Justice Henshey and with the Commission.
Another Irish language
and
group?
But a group, a loose network of community radio broadcasters. And they called themselves the NACB, the National Association for Community Broadcasting. And very active amongst them was, I think you were involved with Horizon Radio in Bray.
Yes.
And they went on to become East Coast Radio.
Yes.
So they had been active, and they then dropped out because they got a licence. But those who were still in the NACB, people who are now on air,
Near FM,
and to an extent, Y'all Community Radio, or Community Radio Y'all, and Dublin South Community Radio, and a few others, were very active and were pushing for a review of the Commission's strategy. And everyone was very disappointed when the second commission was appointed, and again it was under the stewardship of Justice Henshey, and more or less the same composition. And I suppose it's hard to be objective here, but there was a strong feeling amongst those of us who were lobbying at the time, that the Commission just did not want to know about anything except money. That they wanted stations to be self-sustaining and profitable, more than just self-sustaining. They were terrified that a station would fail. Things were very difficult when Century Radio failed, although this was a national station and there are lots of reasons behind that. But it made the Commission very, very nervous. And so the NACB took it upon themselves to invite the World Association of Community Broadcasters, or AMARC as its French acronym is, to come to UCD in Dublin the summer of 1990 and to host a major conference there. This happens every few years for the World Association of Community Broadcasters. Everybody comes together. It's a training festival and it's a great space to share ideas. And the main, I suppose, protagonist in all of this, Jack Byrne, of now of Near FM, but formerly of Concord in Coolock, Concord FM in Coolock, wrote to the Commission and said that this was happening and that there would be a march outside the offices of the IRTC to protest about the fact that Ireland was one of the countries that did not have licensed community broadcasting. And why was this when it had been in existence 30 years in countries like Australia and all over Latin America? And so the opinions differ on this, and I suppose I should be careful, but I'm going to say it anyway. The feeling amongst community activists was that the next move by the Commission was very cynical, because a letter went out to everyone to say that licences would be issued soon. And so the conference was held and everybody went home to Latin America and to Canada and to Africa and all over the world. And then we waited and waited and waited. So nothing came. But eventually there was a change of government. And with the change of government came a change of minister. And Michael D. Higgins, who's now in the ORIS, was appointed Minister for Communications. And he had some very, very wide ranging and really well-informed ideas about broadcasting. People might be familiar with his call in 1994 for a complete review of the broadcasting communication strategy of the government, and he had a very wide consultation in that, and he quoted people that academics like Habermas talks about, you know, the importance of democratic spaces for communication and the importance of that for civil society, and you know, very, very inspiring. Unfortunately, the government fell and nothing came of much came of that since. But before the government fell, going back to 1993, and I promised I'd be clear and I know I'm not, back in 1993, pressure was put to bear on the new commission, and the new commission was headed up again by a broad-minded man, Niall Stokes of Hot Press fame. And we asked the question, why not have community radio in Ireland? It's allowed for under the legislation, but you're the only one stopping it. And so between the jigs and the reels, eventually the commission said, OK, well, we'll grant two licences. And initially they wanted one licence for all of Dublin. They wanted all the community groups to come together and broadcast on the one frequency. And again, I suppose that shows the poor job that the community activists, myself included, had done on educating the commission, because the whole point of community broadcasting is that you broadcast to your own community. You're not broadcasting about community issues to a wide city or whatever. You're broadcasting to your own group. So in the case of Radio Na Dhrav, for example, or of Radio Na Lifa as it now exists, they broadcast citywide, or they want to broadcast citywide, because their community of Irish speakers is scattered across the whole city. Yeah. But if it's a geographic community like Coolock in Dublin, or like Abbey Field in West Limerick, then you broadcast to that small locality. Or people might be familiar with Connemara Community Radio up in Letterfrack. So they broadcast to just 10,000 people, the little strip of land that Letterfrack is on, that runs as far as Clifton and out into the ocean to cover Inishturk and
Inishbofin,
where they have a studio. So another success story there. But coming back to 1993, the commission was persuaded eventually that this wouldn't work, one licence wouldn't work, so they allowed for two licences. And there's no doubt in my mind but that there was a bit of political pushing and shoving going on at the time, because we in Radio Na Lifa were very lucky to get one, because we were the Irish speakers and that ticked a few boxes for important people. And the other licence that was offered was to Anna Livia, as it then was, and it was to be this conglomerate that I was talking about. And that conglomerate, really the majority of community broadcasters in the Dublin area decided not to go in on that one, because they wanted their own geographic station. So Anna Livia started in 1993 in Grafton Street. It has morphed since into Dublin City Radio, which is mainly giving traffic news and is doing a good job of that. But I think it shows the lack of education or the lack of foresight of the or of understanding of the commission, because it was an animal that was created out of man's head, not one that was growing organically or one that was going to work. Radio Linlithgow came on air in 1993. And then in 1994, the commission said that they would try this idea of community radio, even though they had two in the country and they had a huge file in the office of examples that were sent to them by the activists from stations around the world. But they decided they would try a pilot scheme of 18 months. And in that 18 months, people would see whether they were able to sustain it. And the commission would then decide whether they would offer longer term licences. And so at that stage, some people who had been on the air in the pirate era, like Connemara Community Radio, like Coolock, like Talla, like Dublin South, like Community Radio Yall, all applied for licences, and some student groups. And I was involved in that student bid for Wired, Flirt FM. Andrew Wheel, who's now back in his alma mater of NUI Galway, was the main mover in Galway. And in Cork, there were a number of people behind that initiative, but Donagh O'Hay was probably the principal person there. And 11 stations got granted 18-month licences for this pilot scheme. So we all started rowing our own boats and doing our best. But the really crucial single act of the commission after allowing the pilot scheme to go ahead was that they appointed somebody as a research officer just to see how the scheme was working out. And that person took it upon himself to do a lot more than just researching. He called 6 meetings of all of the stations, which of course stations attended because it had the tag of the IRTC on it. And he pushed very hard for people to stop worrying about their own little station, their own little field, and to start looking to see what were the similarities across all of the 11 and what ways could we work to combine to help each other to survive, first of all, to get funding. We were very successful with that. But also to see how we could help each other with programming ideas, training ideas. And out of that networking came the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, which became CRAIL, which is a fantastic resource for the 20-something stations that are on air at the moment, where they can go for support in dealing with the commission, with the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, licensing issues, where they can get legal advice, where they can get training, where they can get face-to-face meetings with other stations and be mentored, and where there's a programme sharing network. It's been a fantastic resource.
I'd like to ask you about the philosophy of community radio. You go into this in great detail in your book about the democratic nature, the participative nature of the medium. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's so important in the general broadcasting landscape?
Community broadcasting isn't really about broadcasting as much as it's about community. That's where people get confused. They hear radio station and they think, oh, it must be all about the number of listeners or the quality of the programming. Is it innovative or is it, you know, the top 10 programs that people are watching or listening to? But actually, that's not what it's about at all. It's about getting as many people in the community involved, not for the sake of broadcasting. In many ways, it could be through, there could be another tool or vehicle like agriculture or like drama or like years ago religion took that space in a way. It's a vehicle to get people who have shared and common interests and shared and common problems to come together, to recognise each other, to know each other, to begin to work, to talk to each other and work with each other, to identify their problems and to identify solutions to them. So it has much more in common with community development as a practice than it has to do with RTE or Radio Kerry or Live 95 here in Limerick. It just happens that radio is the vehicle that people use to accomplish that. And it's often quite a surprise to people when they start to work in a station that they have to go through a little bit of induction or indoctrination in order to be, I suppose, conscientized into that way of looking at things. The World Association of Community Broadcasters have a very clear charter, and that was adopted by the European branch of that, which I've served on for a number of years, which is called the AMARC Europe Charter. And the Irish broadcasters, community broadcasters, then honed it down a little bit more to make it suitable for themselves here in Ireland. And it very simply says that the community radio station or television station serves the community and is made up of and is broadcast by the community itself. So it's a bit like the old thing of democracy for the people, by the people, of the people. It goes, it's a bit more explicit than that in saying that it should be not for profit. So the station can make money, but that money must go back into the projects that the station runs. Community radio stations are always engaged in a political manner, taking the side of minorities, of the disenfranchised, of the powerless. So we see that in local radio, for example, Radio Kirkabashkin out in Kilkee has been to the fore in working with people who are housebound, with smallholders, with the unemployed, with all of the various groups that are often isolated in remote communities like the Loophead Peninsula, or again, Connemara Community Radio, the same thing with the islands and rural Connemara. Then I suppose the other thing that separates them from other stations is the need to constantly review what they're doing and to see, to be accountable to their community. So it's not just a matter of a commercial station seeing are they raising money through advertising and therefore they must be successful. It's more a case of do the community know that the station is there for them? Are they using it as a resource? How many of them are they reaching? In what way are they reaching into their lives? Can they see anything tangible that they've done that means that they have, they can say that we've been successful? So it's a huge job and usually done for no pay, just for the love of fellow man.
And how would you describe then the strengths and weaknesses of the community radio sector at the moment?
It's typical answer. It's a good question there, John. I think one of the biggest strengths, I suppose, the community radio sector rather than community broadcasting has at the moment is that it's still in existence and that there are, I think, 22 stations on air at the moment. However, that's also one of its greatest weaknesses because we're talking 21 years now since all of those stations were first, since the first 11 stations came on air. And they've only doubled in number in 21 years. So if 11 could come on air in 1 year, one would expect that that number should have tripled or quadrupled by now. And as a member of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, it's one of the things that I'm looking to try and have an influence on, to try and encourage more stations to become aspirant stations and to try and get more communities on air. CRAIL, the Community Radio Network, has a great facility, both online and as face-to-face support for groups who want to go on air. Before my time in the authority, the BAI introduced a really good system whereby people can apply for an RSL, for a restricted broadcasting licence, which gives them 100 days, which can be taken as 50 weekends, which will give you every weekend in a year, or 100 days in a row. So you can try out the broadcasting experiment and see, do you have the strengths that you need, what capacities do you need to build up on before you commit to actually, you know, going full scale into employing people, getting a building, getting your premises and all of that. So it really is a great scheme and a great opportunity for people. I think one of the biggest weaknesses for the community radio movement in Ireland at the moment is the lack of energy and cohesion to try and advertise that and to sell themselves to others, not in a commercial way, but in a far more important and fundamental way to say, this is a really good resource for you as citizens of this land, as people who live in a community, as people who see community disappearing from them and who want to try and strengthen it and bring back the good qualities of, I suppose, what it means to live in commune with others, and that this is a great tool and resource that we could use and access. And it's a big criticism I would have of the movement at the moment, that that message is just not going out there.
Dr. Rosemary Day of Mary Immaculate College in Limerick.
You're listening to Wired FM.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had the turntable at the wrong speed. Want to try it again?
Limerick's oldest community radio station is Wired FM, which serves the city's student population from studios in Mary Immaculate College and Limerick Institute of Technology. Wired recently celebrated its 21st birthday and is one of only three full-time campus FM radio stations in the country. It broadcasts on 99.9 FM 4 days a week from Monday to Thursday and involves students from both institutions. Wired FM's manager is Ray Burke.
The station was set up in 1995 and has been running since. So we're sending our we're celebrating our 21st birthday this year. prior to that, there was a short license that the IRTC gave us for a couple of months, but we went off air and we weren't actually called Wired FM. But it started in 1995 right up to 2016. It's been consistently going as Wired FM with no time off air. So it is, like you say, like UCC and NUIG, we've got a student community of interest license. So unlike other community stations that are kind of based around their geography, we are, you know, well, I suppose we are, it's geographical as well, but it's mainly to serve the students of Limerick City. So we're a partnership between LIT and Mary I. UL used to be in the partnership but pulled out about 9 years ago. And even though we're a partnership between two colleges, we cater for all the students in Limerick. So we broadcast to students of LCFE or UL and the secondary and primary school students as well.
Okay, so the primary school, secondary school students are part of your remit as well, are they?
Yeah, very much so. Last year we started a weekly transition year show with the students of Sexton Street, the CBS in Sexton Street. We're hoping that this year there's enough interest from several of the girls' schools to start a TY from one of the secondary girls' schools as well. Primary school, when we're making education programs and things like that, we always try to cater for them as well. Obviously, when the majority of your workforce or your volunteers are third level students, you kind of that dictates what kind of an audience you have as well. But we do, you know, they're very much part of our remit as far as our manifesto is concerned.
Okay, and to talk about manifestos then, the philosophy obviously is of community radio, which is all about participation. But how does this work on a practical basis then here in Mary Immaculate College?
During this time, these last couple of weeks since the students came back, what we do is we start to campaign for new volunteers. We go out into the communal areas, set up a stand, give people some information about the station, how we differ from commercial radio, the things that we can and can't do, and things like that. We're pretty liberal station. There's not many things that we can't do. Maybe that's the wrong way of describing it, but that we have a certain amount of community, like a community remit, like that we can't just be playing music for the entire day. So in Mary I and in LIT and at the Art College for the last couple of weeks, and we're down in the Art College recruiting today, we're just trying to get get the workforce together that we lost from graduation or from people going on work experience or things like that. In Mary I, the media department students always take their third year as a co-op year, so they're interning in various places nationally and internationally. So this whole time is given over to recruitment. So that's how we go out and try to get like people involved.
And is it difficult then to sustain this level of involvement from students? Obviously, they're changing all the time. It's not a static group.
It's probably the most difficult thing about student radio is that by the time people are graduating, they've they're finally kind of there, and then they leave, and you have to start again with a new group. And in community stations, where it's geographical and there's a strong kind of volunteer base that are involved in loads of aspects of the station, there's several students that are quite content to come in and do their program and leave. Whereas, like in community radio that I've worked in before, there's a supporting network there of people who are involved in lots of different facets of the station and stuff. So it's definitely very, very difficult to keep the same numbers going when you're constantly losing students each year, either, as I said, to graduation or people interning and stuff. So every year you're starting again, and when you're trying to develop in other ways, you're always hitting that brick wall of going, well, we actually you know, we have to get out and recruit people now because we're down like a lot. And this year was particularly bad, like, because just a huge amount of people that have been involved in the station for a long time all graduated.
Okay, and is it difficult to sell the community radio philosophy to students because they probably have no experience of it? I mean, they're brought up on a diet of Spin Southwest or Limerick's Live 95 or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it is, you know, for most people, it's fairly alien to them. Although this year, when I asked people to put their hands up over in some of the classes over in LIT, there was a huge amount of people who had already done work with community radio. So there seemed to be more of awareness this year in LIT anyway. I suppose LCCR being going in Limerick for the last couple of years now, people are more aware of what they do and they're hearing the term a little bit more. We're kind of lucky in a way because we don't have to be as gung-ho like community remit as those other community stations. It's through the prism of students. So everything that's like, and community is such a broad word, you know? So if you're conscious of the fact of what I'm saying now about an application going into the BAI, but it's about bringing the content of stuff that the programs that we do back to the remit and not worrying about like dictating what is and what isn't. If somebody wants to do something and it's done from the prism of students, then it's arguably like fitting our remit anyway. You know, before I was concerned about the ratio of stuff that we might have within an outside broadcast, but then you realise that just being out like somewhere in the city and conversing with diverse groups and all that, like, that's completely our remit. We don't have to worry about, you know, was there a certain amount of Irish talk spoken or was there a certain amount of music and stuff. So it takes a while for students to grasp, you know, the differences between us and them as the commercial, but there's bigger problems, I think, really outside of that. We keep on kind of hammering that. The biggest problems we have is that kind of people just broadcasting to their own campus and not thinking about the, you know, the 40,000 plus students that are in Limerick City.
So what do you mean by that? That the programs are too inward looking sometimes, or
well, sometimes people from Mary Eye might just be broadcasting to the Mary Eye campus, and we have to, you know, kind of constantly reiterate that when you're broadcasting to LIT students, UL students, and as I said before, secondary and primary school students as well. So I suppose when I was on college radio, maybe some of the stuff I was doing and stuff was a bit in-jokey as well. But sometimes when you're making reference to a lecture and you're in the English department, like, I mean, that's alienating for anybody outside of a campus because no one knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, so this is part of the issue you have to do with training.
So I'd say that's even more, that's more difficult than they, like, sticking to the community ethos, because we really go overboard on that at the start of the year because we just want them to understand the differences, like, that you can't compete with production values like of a commercial station. So don't try do what they do and do it poorly. Bring a certain amount of creativity and innovation to how you might do things a little bit different. See, I way prefer somebody trying something new and failing at it, and not necessarily failing at it, but this space is for development. Like, you know, we don't expect anybody after doing the couple of training sessions and going on and being fully formed. That professionalism usually comes from having spent a couple of times listening back to themselves and picking stuff out themselves. Like, there's no better critic than yourself when it comes to this kind of stuff. Like, and the people who don't progress as quickly as others are the ones that are afraid to listen to themselves, or kind of don't even encourage friends to listen to them, like, you know. So then they're just happy to go on. But you're always going to sound amateurish when you're going to try do something that's, you know, being done by professionals with a team of professionals as well. Like, you know, if you listen to a show on a commercial station, there's a researcher, there's a producer, it could be several researchers, and it could be two presenters and stuff. Like, you have a team of professionals working on it. You can't compete with that when you're just learning, like, you know. But you can definitely come up with innovative content. I have friends that are working as researchers in commercial stations that look to, you know, community radio and look to Twitter and look to any source they can to find out about ideas and stuff, because when stuff is like the Daily Edge or BuzzFeed and stuff, is if my mom has read it about it at 9:30 in the morning on Facebook, like, you can be sure that every student has. So taking content from there is not going to work, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. A different approach altogether needed, yeah. And what about students, though, and radio as a medium? I mean, is radio really threatened, especially music radio? I mean, you're not just doing music radio, but you play a lot of interesting music on Wired. So, but with Spotify and all the rest of streaming services, is radio not really almost history at this stage? Jurist at that risk?
Well, I really don't know, and it's obviously something that, like, I was talking to you beforehand about applying for the new 10-year license. It could be, you know, I don't know, so whether we're applying for an FM license, like, is that going to be that important in 5 years' time? I don't know. It's impossible gauge, because if, you know, obviously Spotify is really huge, and like, some of my friends who would have spent a fortune on records over the year have resigned to just having a subscription for Spotify now. But as Spotify grows, so too does the popularity of podcasts and the diversity of podcasts and stuff that's available. So people might be leaving conventional radio, but there's still a hunger for listening to good quality content. Maybe a lot of people are finding that through podcasts and stuff, but that, like, it can also still be done on conventional radio by doing, you know, spending a lot of time on being creative about your content and stuff. I don't know. If I knew the answer to that question, I probably wouldn't be working here. I'd be working somewhere where I'd be getting a lot of money for it, like, you know.
So you've just celebrated the 21st birthday in November, and at this stage, so what kind of a station is Wired at this stage after 21 years? What does the weekly schedule look like, for instance?
The weekly schedule, it's dictated by the popularity of things. Sometimes I think it would be nice to kind of define ourselves like with Flirt is an alternative station, and primarily plays. For the majority of the music is alternative in nature, and I think that would be great to be able to just as something to, you know, kind of market. I suppose market's the wrong word to use for community radio anyway, but it does kind of fluctuate depending on what's popular at the time. 3 or 4 years ago, because a lot of our presenters were really into pop music, the station almost sounded different musically. Like, but now over the last like 2 years, because of the wealth of like good Irish music, and because the students are all listening to that, and there's a huge amount of people involved in the station that play music, there's the media department here is getting bigger, music and technology and video and sound in LIT is getting bigger, so everybody's really invested in Irish music. So the station has kind of become like an almost, I think when I was going through the monitoring there for last year, it was nearly 55-60% Irish music that was being played.
So no problem with reaching the BC.
No, absolutely not. So the schedule has not deviated much from how it was originally. Within that, you have film shows by the Film Society, like the art college students are probably doing a lot of arts and stuff, although that's changed as well. Because departments like the fashion department and the art college and stuff have grown as well, we have a fashion show, which we didn't have before, and things like that. So the station is kind of dictated by what's in the colleges that we can avail of. Like, so that's how we're sounding now. Is I suppose the best way of saying it is we're fully representative of the student population of Limerick. Like, all life is here, you know.
And what about listenership then? Have you any evidence of what listenership is like? I know it's not the most important aspect maybe of community radio, but it is, you can't ignore it at the same time.
We could ignore it, you know. It's really not what we're about, you know. They we can monitor who's listening on the stream. We have a like when there's community radio, like the Red Sea survey that was done a couple of years ago, and there's an MRBI survey that was talking about the work that community radio does in the locality without getting into listenership figures. But we do have an idea of who's listening in. We can gauge certain things like the stream when certain competitions, you'll just be inundated with emails and texts and things like that to enter and stuff. So sometimes when people feel that they're not being listened to, which happens in any community station, they'll get a kick and realize, oh, a lot of people heard that go out. Like I myself always hear from people, whether it be at gigs or any kind of social event in Limerick, because I pretty much go to every opening and things like that just to be out there advocating for the station. And people do listen in. They have their favourite programmes. If you have like a specialist music show, like our metal show, like Titanium Cranium on Flirt FM, there's people who've been listening to that for 7 years. It's been on for 7 years, and they tune in because the person that's like playing the music is more knowledgeable than they are, and they want to be introduced to music, like people going to hear a DJ in a club. Now I know you can Spotify can throw out a collection of like songs and stuff, but that's never going to be the same as somebody who's invested in that music, who's like still spending money on records and who knows a lot about it. But listenership, in board meetings and stuff, I try to not make it important. But I did tell you about the time, like multiple times, going into like a business in whether it be a shop or anything inside in Limerick, and hearing Wired, it warms the heart, you feel like, all right, somebody's paying attention.
So what are the plans for the future then? 21 years just passed, as I say. What are your plans for the future development?
After the media event that just took place in November, where for last year for the 20th anniversary, as part of the LIT Music Week, we have a radio day, a Wired day. So we put it on a series of panel discussions and talks and stuff like that. So that's going to be taking place in February. Then we're just after buying a digital desk and changing the studio in LIT. We're about to update the studios over here. The new library is being built in Mary Eye, and we're going to be moving, and I can't really say much about that now, but we're moving to a kind of a better premises, and there's going to be more footfall, and it's very exciting. We're just going to develop, and keep on doing as much outreach work as we can, make people aware that like this is, even though it's a partnership between LIT and Mary Eye, that no matter what institution you're part of, that you're welcome to come on and be part of Wired FM, because it's for all students.
This is Wired FM, streaming live from Limerick all over the world. Tune in on 99.9 FM.
Ray Burke, manager of Limerick's student radio station Wired FM. Wired broadcasts on weekdays only, but over the past 3 years, its frequency has been shared at the weekend by another licensed broadcaster, Limerick City Community Radio. LCCR is a temporary community station operating under a 100-day licence from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, allowing it to broadcast for 50 weekends of the year. Liam Byrne, vice chair of LCCR, explains the background to the station.
Well, we're on air, this is our third year, so we're heading into our fourth year. It's the second of the 100-day licences, so we opted to have those at weekends, which was Saturday and Sunday, in terms of having the manpower and having the volunteers available, that it wasn't so much of a commitment, because the option would have been there, would say, to run for 30 days a month, which would have been, like, basically give up on the jobs and camp here for the length of time. So we went with the 50 weekends, and we did that. So the first weekend was the 15, the 30-day licence, which would have been, as I said, it wasn't the full month. We went with the weekends for that. And then because that had worked, and because we piggyback with Wired FM, who were the student station, it was pitched to us prior to that actually at one of the CREAL meetings, that it might be an option in order to get off the ground and see what level of interest was there, because they were Monday to Friday, they were students, their frequency was blanket weekends, and it sounded like a fit, but it was obviously not a fit that you could assume that go with it. So we had negotiations with Wired to see what the story was. Now their students head away on a Thursday evening, But the cleaner option there was to go with the 2 days with the 100 licence, like obviously the 2 weekends off of Christmas. You wouldn't have too many volunteers around at that stage. So it gave us the option there. We didn't bother going with the Friday because it left them open that if they had students around, but we took the Saturday and Sunday. So they've been very helpful in relation to that, which it's obviously their frequency, 99.9 FM. But it meant that between the site survey, getting transmitters, getting all of that much was done. So we were able to slot in under that. So very appreciative of their help.
And why did you feel that it was necessary to set up LCCR in the first place? It's a small city. You already have Live 95 FM. There's two stations in the county. Mm. You have Wired already in the city. So where was the need for...
Well, I suppose you probably hit the nail on the head there in relation to the two stations in the county, that you had a niche there, I suppose. Back when in 88, when the first licences went out, a lot of the licences would have been, the official title would have been the Local Sound Broadcasting Services. And there was a lot of talk and there was a lot of, I suppose, community groups that got behind the original licences. Now, they've since evolved, for better or for worse. Obviously, for the people working there, they'd be delighted that they've put more commercial aspect of it, that... it's basically more playlists, more formats, more whatever else. Some of them have joined together in order under one ownership, UTV obviously, and recently sold on again. So there's a few options there that slowly, from the point of view of getting community stuff broadcast, from getting stuff highlighted and stuff like that, the options became less and less. If you have the Formula radio there, it's generally the 9 o'clock until 12 o'clock in the morning. That's the talk show. The rest of it's pretty much music and playlisted and so on. So both in terms of having, I suppose, an element of special interest music where it's a little bit outside the box, and also then having community groups. We've had a few people come in where they've said, oh, like, yeah, we'll come down for an interview to talk about such and such. We've had people wandering the door and saying, right, how long can we be on for? And you can, well, there's an hour there if you want it. They're used to 5 minutes trying to squeeze everything in. It's new to them to actually have a format whereby, like, it's, what, 60-40 talk to music, so it's 40% music. And basically, that's a lot of talk to fill. But there's an awful lot of stories out there that aren't getting coverage, as I said, because the commercial stations have gone more commercial.
So is your plan then to continue broadcasting for the foreseeable future on this restricted licence of 30 days, or are there further development plans than that?
Well, we've just moved studios, so I suppose because everybody involved is voluntary, there's a certain amount, there's a limit. There's loads of things we want to do, but there's a certain amount of what we could actually achieve. Now, the aim, at least for 2017, is to have the 100-day licence, if we can go for that again. And the aim there would be to see what's sustainable. Obviously, the original thing in terms of funding, we had backing from Regeneration, and we were involved with the Tate House. We'd started off originally in upstairs in the garage, was where the original studio was, where we got people together for that. So the aim there would have been to see what's sustainable. Now, obviously, the monkey on the back, is that the right phrase, where the funding was a big aspect of it, because the rent was $6,500 a year, which is a huge outlay, and given it's voluntary and based on voluntary contributions, based on sponsorship of some programmes, that was something we had to get off our back. Now, we moved in here with Music Generation, and that will make a certain amount of stuff way more sustainable, that there isn't as much work then involved in trying to fundraise and stuff like that. With certain aspects will still go ahead, and that will allow us to turn our attention to where once that's sustainable, then to see what's sustainable in terms of programming, in terms of volunteers, in terms of actually getting the best out of what's there.
And is the long term plan then to go on as a full time station, a full time community station for Limerick?
It would be, and depending on the day that you'd have a chat with us, some days it's kind of yes, we're going for that, and other days it's oh my good god, how much work is that going to be? But the essentially, with the amount of coverage that's there, with the amount of, I suppose, one of the downsides is that we were a citywide station, and we were told day one that was actually a fair undertaking, it was ambitious. And if you look at that, it's a double-edged sword, because it's harder if you're a smaller community, then obviously you can get out and about more, everybody will know about you. We've gradually built up a certain amount of listenership, a certain amount of... recognition, I suppose, across the city, but it's been a while, particularly when you're community groups and you've got community groups on other sides of the city that you're trying to get in if you were associated with one side. So the move into the city centre will therefore help in relation to that, and there is an awful lot going on. I suppose the biggest problem we have in terms of a community station is to actually get people in who are involved and who are actually who have the story to tell, who are telling people, like they are the people who are interested in the poetry nights, who are interested in the film societies, who are interested in various community groups. Generally, those people are so busy doing those things that it's hard to get them to commit. But we have a couple of really, really good shows. One of them is done by the ONE, which is the Veteran Society, the Oglegnashunta-Nahéireann. And they've been running a show once a month. So we try to match the level of commitment. Like, obviously, that might not be sustainable for once a week or anything like that. But that community focus, we rotate it every week. And each group comes in once every 4 weeks. So they've got a show to do per month. And that makes it more sustainable and they get out there.
So are you happy from the level of uptake so far that there's the potential for perhaps something more long-term than just the weekends?
There certainly is. Like any of the groups that have come in, and we've had groups, we'll say, who've had people behind the show and they've had people who were capable of it. Then we say they might have a change of committee and then you've got like, oh, I don't know if I could be good on radio because the previous chairman or PRO was well able to talk, whereas somebody else doing the job may not be as into it. But what you'll have is there's an awful lot of groups who've come in who've actually relished the opportunity and they love the idea of it. So as long as there's enough groups there and the word gets out there. And then what we found as well is some people who were popping in for a slot on one particular show would say, like the movie show, for example, would have been the movie group would have been just one part of a show, or they would have been a book review. They've gone on to actually then have a half an hour show, and in some cases they've taken brought two or three other people in. So somebody who was an insert for one show has suddenly become their own show. Now they've got more people, and in some cases they're dying for extra time.
But that's the whole philosophy of community radio, isn't it, though, that one person would bring in other people and eventually they could take to the microphone themselves if they
wanted.
That's
the idea. And we've had people come in, we'll say, who will do editing. Like basically every aspect is available to try out and stuff like that. We've people who are doing journalism courses and want to get a little bit of a trial for what it's really like. And people who are contemplating courses, not sure if it's for them. And there's loads of things behind the scenes. And then every so often it's kind of somebody's thrown in at the deep end, somebody isn't available, somebody's kind of, well, you've done a few weeks of it, yeah, you'll be grand. Possibly having somebody who to mentor them or to just keep an eye out to give them a little bit of reassurance. But the amount of people who are interested in things, and if, like some people who wouldn't even, like, oh, I can't talk on the mic. Yeah, but your story is interesting. And that's one of the things with community radio, that it's not about the star, it's not about the presenter, it's not about the, what you call it, Liam Byrne show or anything like that. It's, okay, there's somebody there with an interesting story. How do we get that out? And it's, again, community radio, I suppose, the other side is where you're looking for listeners and you're looking for what could be the lowest common denominator, but it is the highest audience, which is the general catch-22, that when you're tipping away, for want of a better phrase, on sponsorship and on membership, and you've got 100 people listening, now that's those 100 people, a community station wouldn't, or a commercial station wouldn't be too interested in that, because they're trying to sell advertising, they're trying to maintain actual jobs. Whereas when you've got somebody coming in, okay, that's 100 people listening, they love the show, job done. So that aspect of it is one of the things. Every so often when you've got some of the shows and you've got people who wouldn't otherwise be heard on air, that's nice buzz.
Limerick City Community Radio on 99.9 FM.
The main thing is, I suppose, to have the words out there. You would say the show is going out, this particular interview and the show is going out on Flirt FM, and it's to just, I suppose, to get people to think about community radio and to think about radio. A lot of what is on radio, people will say, oh, it's a playlist, I may as well have it on my iPad, right? I may as well just be listening to
Spotify
or something like that. I'd love to see radio going back to that buzz that some of us of a certain age would have had when you were sitting. Now, at the time, it was probably just music, right? In fairness, you're listening to it, Radio Luxembourg, it wasn't even from the local area. But you had so many aspects of pirate radio, and we have seen all of the stations kind of pull together, a lot of the formatting, a lot of the amalgamation, and we've basically seen some of the syndicated shows, where one show, one station will run another show from another station. And it's minus the idents, but you've got the local, like, they don't mention where it's from. It's a big thing in America. I'd hate to see it happen here, because one of the things that Ireland was really, really, and all of the cities in particular, like Dublin was probably the strongest, then Limerick maybe second, and then Galway and Cork to some extent as well. We had pirate radio, and it's really strange that once things got legitimised and everything was legal and above board, as it should be, like people's jobs and so on, but you suddenly have less local, which sounds like it got flipped on its head somewhere on the line. So if people, like, be it on community stations, be people listening, be people running stations, that one of the ways, I would say, to actually get people to switch off the iPad, switch off Spotify and listen to the radio again, is to have local voices back on it, be it people who are really, really good at what they do and are really slick, who need an outlet, somebody in Galway, somebody in Limerick, unless you move to Dublin, you're not going to get on one of the national stations or anything like that. But likewise, people who have stories. And there's so many things that are out there, people recording little CD for a charity, people in an old folks' home who've got stories to tell. And it's in 10 years' time when those people have passed on and something like that, it's kind of, that's their story. We didn't record it.
But there's so little of that really on radio when you think about it. These cash-starved community stations, obviously they have to be cash-starved, but I mean very under-resourced. Mm. And then large commercial broadcasters that have a terrible sameness about them and are awfully homogenous.
It is, and it's very easy to be critical. Like, say, I was involved in commercial radio. I was probably involved in every aspect of it some way along the lines. And it's not like they don't think of it. Like, there's a lot of stuff, different stuff to be involved with commercial radio. Like I said, budget alone and paying for stuff means you have to attract the advertisers. Somebody sitting listening to music could say, oh, X Factor, I'd write it off. But that's what attracts the big audiences, therefore that attracts the advertisers, whatever else. There's a place for all of this thing. I just hate for some of the stuff to get lost along the way. And when you've got local voices that it's not been syndicated, it's not a pre-record, it's not voice-tracked, somebody in the industry, it's kind of, here's a three-hour show, but I did it in 15 minutes while I was waiting for the kettle to boil and the microwave to finish my dinner. Mm-hmm. Because those guys are slotting in for their 30-second link, five songs in a row, another 30-second link. I think one of the things there is where people who are interested in radio, they don't want to go in, they want to be in the studio, they want to be getting the texts, they want to be getting an interaction and so on. So radio has changed, and I think one of the things that it should have, like one of the things that absolutely stuns me, and I know we're going on too long, no. One of the things that stuns me is the Pirates used to live overnights, and you could text in, or if you were driving the car and...
But there's none of that now.
There isn't. That's what I'm saying. That you could have been driving in the car, and it's one of the times I used to love radio. And I even used to pop into I was with Radio Limerick 1 and with Clare FM over the years. And I actually popped in one night on the way home from Galway, right? Because I wanted to. And it was that buzz. And Francis Jones was down with Radio Kerry, was on. And just the buzz of the night, it was quiet. Anyone listening to radio at that hour of the night is actually listening. They're not being distracted by housework or kids or whatever the case might be. And now nobody does live overnights. But that's the time. And particularly if you were driving in the car, and if it's music, followed by music, and they've all these signs like, okay, pull over if you feel tired. Listening to somebody talking or having that engagement is what's going to keep you awake. Whereas if it's songs one after the other, it's... So, yes, there's people working nights. There aren't that many people driving at night. Maybe not. Definitely not a huge audience. But I'd love to see that level of interaction where somebody's text that comes in matters, where somebody who pops into the studio, their story matters. It's not part of your 10% news. So hopefully community radio will fill that gap.
Limerick City Community Radio is licensed by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland and broadcasts each Saturday and Sunday on 99.9 FM with thanks to Wired FM. If you're involved in a community group and are interested in getting involved with Limerick City Community Radio, then email us, volunteer@lccorg.ie, or get in touch via our Facebook page, facebook.com/Limerick City Community Radio. Limerick City Community Radio. Your city, your station, your voice.
Liam Byrne of Limerick City Community Radio. And finally, some other news from the radio world. Alternative music station 8 Radio is back on the air on FM in Dublin for 5 weekends in November and December under a temporary licence. Normally an online station only, 8 Radio began broadcasting on 94.3 FM in Dublin on November the 19th and will continue every weekend until December the 18th. 8 Radio will also be available on FM every weekend in February and March under a multi-city licence, including Galway. Dublin pirate station Nonstop 90s closed down on October the 31st with the intention of seeking a licence. As the name suggests, the station had been broadcasting Nonstop 90s music on FM in Dublin over the past year and built up a loyal following. In the days before close down, Nonstop 90s switched on additional transmitters on FM, medium wave and even short wave.
The annual festive station Christmas FM has been on the air since the end of November. It broadcasts on FM each year using a 30-day licence and is also available at christmasfm.com and on apps. All broadcasters volunteer their time and the charity partner this year is Focus Ireland. You can listen in Galway on 89.5 FM. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back on the first Monday in January when we'll hear more from US radio academic and activist John Anderson about the challenges associated with digital radio. Broadcast historian Eddie Bowen will give us his view of the current state of Irish radio, and as usual, we'll also feature news from the radio world. I do hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. There's also a blog accompanying the programme, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.